Good evening and welcome to ThinkRant. It's Thursday 12th of May and I'm your host, John Stabler. With me as usual are my trusty co-hosts, Stephen Brett and Trevor Williams. This week we have, as a special guest, Ashley Price. Ashley is founder and president of the Edinburgh Skeptic Society, as well as co-creator of the Scottish Skeptic Society. This is actually me, on my own, re-recording the introduction to the podcast. Although we managed to go out fine on the live stream, technical difficulties have led to the loss of the beginning of the recording, and the rest of the podcast, although listenable, contains some mic noise too. However, we had so much fun doing it, we didn't want to not release it to you guys. So, without any delay, I'll hand over to Ashley with the first story.
I kind of caught the big questions last Sunday with Richard Dawkins, and they were discussing, is the Bible still relevant? And I thought it was a really interesting show. Usually, on the big questions, I'll have maybe three topics to discuss. But they put the whole show over to simply this one question, is the Bible still relevant? And I thought, by the time we got to the end of the show, it was an interesting show because they hadn't really ascertained whether it was or wasn't still relevant. A lot of the Christians in the audience were getting quite annoyed, saying, well, no, we only need to take the New Testament. The Old Testament isn't really the center of Christianity. And I thought, well, okay, that's all well and good, but the topic of the show is the Bible still relevant? And it seemed that under that definition of what they were trying to get across, well, no, it really wasn't, not as a whole entire piece. Obviously, the Old Testament stories, Sodom and Gomorrah, were brought up, and a few of the New Testament ones as well, such as Richard Dawkins pointing out that the death of Jesus is actually quite a disgusting thing to have happened. And it really, really is. It took this human sacrifice, if we assume the tale is true, it took this human sacrifice for this ultimate being to be able to forgive these sins that are based on a story which many Christians believe to be myth anyway. So it was a few times during it, as usual when I watch discussions and debates of this matter, this type, I was getting quite annoyed at a few moments, and then championing and cheering when someone said something sensible, which I've not watched too much of the big questions, but it seems to be quite a respectable show in many ways. I've seen the ones I have seen, they've always given equal time to both points, which is quite a nice point.
I thought it was quite balanced, actually. And I thought that Dr. Fran seemed to be talking a lot of sense.
Yes.
She, at the very, very, well, from the beginning through most of it, I think she was very measured. And everything she said kind of made sense. Right up until, I think, the very, very end, when she kind of went into some kind of, she retreated into moral relativity to defend the sand dwellers of the Old Testament.
Yes.
I didn't quite understand what her point was that. I mean, she was trying to defend the literacy value of the Bible, but she ended up trying to defend their morality, and I thought that she was just completely barking up the wrong tree with that one.
Well, the morality question did get raised quite often, and it was constantly being pointed out that, oh, well, without the Bible, we wouldn't have the laws and the morals we have today. And whenever I hear that argument, I just think, does this mean before the Bible was written, people didn't have these morals? People didn't have these laws? Before the Bible was written, there were still laws against crime, still laws against theft and murder. People still had morals and ethics. They may be a little bit different to what we think of today, but to say that we only have it because of the Bible is naive in the extreme. And actually, to someone who isn't religious, I almost find it quite offensive to say that I need the Bible to be good.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we all agree on that one. I mean, I just thought it was extremely naive of the bishop to pull out the Ten Commandments and try and pretend that somehow all of our laws are based on them and how our society is based on them, when I can think of three.
First four awful.
Yeah, I mean, the first four are awful. I was thinking about, I mean, stealing and murder, obviously two laws. I think
thou shalt not enslave and thou shalt not rape. That's two of them, aren't they?
No.
Oh, no, wait a second. They're not.
And I was going to say,
not any of the 613 of the bloody things.
I was going to say, honouring your father and mother may not be necessarily a bad one. but all the others seem to be kind of a bit meh.
I think George Carlin got it right when he took the Ten Commandments and broke them down to the absolute basics of what you needed. And I think he came up with two, which were basically, thou shalt be honest and loyal to the provider of thy nookie, and thou shalt try real hard not to kill anyone.
Try real hard, see? At least he was realistic.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he made the point a couple of times about all our morality comes from the Ten Commandments. But what he's basically implying is that Moses came down from Mount Sinai and he was saying, okay, these rules apply now, but I can see you've murdered my wife and you've been coveting her for quite a while. That's fine. Let's just forget about that, because you didn't know, did you? It was perfectly fine. And all the things you stole from me, you can keep them. Don't worry about it. But now we'll be moral. It's bloody nonsense.
And I thought it was quite dumbed down, to be honest. I thought the debate could have been a lot better than that. I thought that they kind of got sidetracked by some, you know, real red herrings throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was nice, as always, to see Dawkins discussing and debating. But for me, I almost felt that he wasn't really the right person to have had on. I felt Dr. Fran was quite good to have had on because of her knowledge of the Bible. And I just... Although I do like Dawkins and I like his debating and I like his points, I would have thought somebody along the lines of maybe Christopher Hitchens would have been a better choice. Obviously, Hitchens at this moment is not a realistic option, but I just didn't really feel like Dawkins... I felt he was there because he's Richard Dawkins and not because he had something necessarily to add.
No, I agree with you completely, and I even agree with you saying Hitchens, because that was who I thought of would have been better, because it wasn't basically a battle of reason. It was a rhetorical battle, and I think you'd have been far better suited to it than Dawkins.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how angry that bishop would have got if Hitchens was actually in the room? He would have exploded.
Well,
he would have burst into flame right there.
Yeah. The thing is, as well, I was kind of glad about the panel was actually balanced. A lot of the times I've watched the big questions, and the panel is very loaded in favour of the clergy, especially on just general moral questions and things like that. You very rarely see a humanist on there. But it was nice to have Dr. Fran on there because, you know, kind of she was the other side to Dawkins, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If the practices of attacking straw men and moving the goalposts had been banned from that program, there would have just been an empty purple shirt next to Dr. Fran. That man just got cross at everybody and changed the subject. That's all the man did.
It was quite sad, because some people will watch that and see him practically representing Christianity. And, you know, as we all know, not all Christians are the same, and it's difficult to even define what Christianity is and define what a Christian is. But to watch that show, you've got Richard Dawkins, who did get a little bit angry. You've got Dr. Fran, who was quite reasonable. You had the Jewish lady, who was actually, for a large part, quite sensible, even though she believes in the old...
No, sorry, I got serious complaints about her, but I'll come back to them. Carry on.
Okay. I just felt that the bishop really gives a bad example of what Christianity is, and for someone who's maybe not too familiar with it and doesn't really have much to do it, it could give them a negative idea of what all Christians are like. And I don't like this idea of lumping all Christians in together and saying this is Christian, this is what they believe, this is how they all act. Because they don't. I'm sure we've all got friends and families who are in some way a Christian and probably are not like
Stephen.
We saw with Bishop at all.
I am. Steve's a Christian. There you go.
See, I thought that rabbi woman was actually setting a fairly good example for Judaism, and I thought that the bishop was setting quite a good example for Judaism.
Yes. I had serious complaints about the... sorry, I will look up her name and not just call her the Jewish woman. Return to the screen. I don't want to say she's a nobody, but let's just say she doesn't have a Wikipedia page. Rabbi Laura Jana Klausner. Now, for me, I thought that she was basically seeking applause with daft platitudes the entire time. And I don't think she actually added anything intelligent to it. She was just basically trying to take the middle ground wherever she could see it. And one of the most ridiculous things I saw was her attempts, her mental gymnastics to kind of excuse the first commandment. She said, "Oh no, it doesn't mean you can't have other gods. It means that, you know, you're human, you're not a god, and so, you know, you shouldn't put God before yourself." And I thought, you know, I mean, you're taking the interpretation thing to the extreme there. And what are you on about, lady?
But she was all about, rather than believing the Bible to be literally true, it's just presenting an argument, and it's up to every person to make that argument. Her irrationality came from just being religious, and we can't really do anything about that. I thought it was a very... she put a good case for everybody being responsible for their own morality, you know? That's what I liked about it.
Okay, that's fair enough. I did think that a lot of the stuff she spouted were just platitudes, though, and I think that she was just playing to what I think was a stacked audience in her favour.
Well, the audience were funny.
That's a wonderful members, weren't they? It was an evangelical chap, wasn't he? He didn't really say too much, which was surprising.
Well, to be honest, and this was what I thought was the interesting thing about it, is I think everybody in the room agreed that interpretation was a very important thing. And basically, he was the only person who believed that this book was inerrant, and he made a complete tit of himself within 2 minutes. So they just didn't really want to go back to him, really. So...
I did enjoy Dawkins' statement near the end when he said this shouldn't have been a discussion of is the Bible still relevant? It should have been a discussion on is literature still relevant? And I quite like that because obviously he saw, and many of us see, the Bible as just a collection of fictional stories. And I did like him simply saying this should have been a discussion about literature and is literature still relevant as opposed to just the Bible.
But then there wouldn't have been any... there wouldn't have been any disagreement because literature is always going to be relevant. And I think Dawkins would say that it is going to be relevant as a piece of literature. I think that they were arguing that it's more than that. It's a super book. Because quite often it was said that everyone agreed you need to interpret it. But then once they were taken down that logical path of, well, if you need to interpret it and the morality is external to it, what's the point of the book? Why not ditch the book? But then all of a sudden it became special again. And I think that was the sticking point.
Yeah, that was quite a bit of a jump backwards and forwards there. But I thought it was an interesting debate, and there were some interesting points raised. And I did feel like that Dr. Fran was probably the strongest person on the stage, for me.
Yeah, what did you reckon, Trev?
I don't know if you saw her. She had a 3-part series about archaeology in the Bible, and that was kind of hamstrung by the fact that she had to be nice to every religious person because she's a biblical scholar. She needs access to all the various churches. But in this case, it made her the best person to talk because she took very great steps not to offend anybody, but for the case for rationality.
Steve didn't get time to actually watch the program, unfortunately, did you? That's why Steve's been so quiet.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see it at all, I'm afraid, so...
But did you have anything to add? I mean, you've seen this bishop before, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I've seen him before. I'm not a huge fan of his, and I think, you know, kind of, when we did... I think we probably kind of touched on this in previous podcasts, you know, with regards to the authenticity of the Bible and its relevance. I think we've kind of done that before, so I haven't got anything new to add.
Okay.
I said previously.
That's fine. Did anyone else have anything to say about it? I mean, I think we've pretty much done it. It was interesting. But as I said, I don't know why Dawkins. There could have been so many better people.
He was on. They had Richard Dawkins on because he was Richard Dawkins. That was really the only reason they had him on, which is a shame.
He must have
they
been.
They don't diss Dawkins, man.
Oh no, I'm not. I think Dawkins is fantastic.
But it's just that he's used to addressing scholarly people who know what he means by ignorant.
Oh,
and that
don't
was the bit where I lost his rat.
Oh, yes.
Wait, okay? Before we start the ignorance argument, okay, I may ask that person on the podcast one day, so let's not get too insulting. Okay.
Which person?
Right, okay, let's move on.
Okay. Okay.
Trev, do you want to do your feature first, or shall I do my feature first?
Oh yeah, play my jingle again. I love it. Go on, go.
Can you? I'm excited for you. Here we go. Ready?
Thank you.
Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?
Yes, I have.
Yay!
Actually, it's from last week. I found another one this week. They're all over the place. But this one, it's from last week. The Pope fires Bishop over row with Vatican. Pope Benny has removed from pastoral care, or sacked, Bishop William Morris of Brisbane, Australia. Now, that's a very rare move. Normally, the Pope would ask a wayward church leader to resign, then announce his acceptance of it. So what could Bishop Billy have possibly done that was so bad?
Sorry, are we allowed to guess?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I can say what it wasn't. I mean, obviously it wasn't he abused children, because that would have been fine. He could have just carried on in his position.
No, he gets promoted then.
Yeah, true.
He gets a new parish. I know what this is.
That's exactly what happened, wasn't it? You hide and protect paedophiles, and you become God's mouthpiece.
Was it something as awful as getting married?
No.
I know what this is. He was actually fighting for women bishops and women in the clergy. And also, I think he's quite open about, being able to marry and stuff like that, and the celibacy side of it.
So I wasn't too far off?
No, not too far. No.
Yeah, no. It's true. But you'd think that maybe he wanted to go a bit further and suggest marriage ceremonies for lesbians be performed in the Catholic Church, because the diocese that he operated in was called Toowoomba. So, you know, power of advertising. But no, that wasn't what it was. Just because in the developed world, the amount of priests volunteering are dwindling so fast, he just suggested maybe married blokes and women might be a good idea. Maybe we should talk about it. And he immediately got sacked.
Yeah, he just wanted a debate, but that's enough to get you sacked. It wouldn't have surprised me if they hadn't excommunicated him if he's, mentioned having gays in the church as well.
Totally. But yeah, but of course Catholicism is still growing incredibly fast, but in the uneducated third world, bizarrely. I'm sure that's a coincidence.
A lot of humming going on there.
I know. It was such an outlandish thing for somebody to be removed like that. And you think, wow, for a Catholic priest to actually be sacked, what the hell has he done?
Yeah.
Has he actually set fire to a room full of teddy bears? What was it? But no.
Was he actually a guard in a World War II concentration camp or something? You know, that would have, that might have got him sacked. Probably not.
Flicked the switch and filmed a porn video while he was at it. Maybe that is sick enough. But no, he just suggested married blokes might be Catholic priests. Wow. It's like the Pope is acting like some weird drunk uncle that you don't want to wake up because he might lash out at you.
He does sound quite harsh, to be fair. I mean, I thought John Paul was a bit of a...
Isn't he a rapper?
Sorry, John Paul. Did I say John? Sorry, I'm just getting over my cold, so I still say some stupid things. It's not the amount of alcohol I've consumed, I promise. Yes, I saw that story, and it was ridiculous. So, have you got more, or are we gonna do it? Are we gonna do the competition?
What are you after?
But is it my feature?
Is it time for John and for us to guess the year?
Oh God!
Does this require a drum roll or something?
Okay, sorry. This is our regular feature, or at least the one that we've had the longest, where we get to guess the year. So
2011.
Right. Okay. Again, rule breakers will be punished. Okay. Let me explain the rules, and then I'll explain why you've just been punished, okay? What happens is, I've picked a year...
That's so fair.
I've picked a year where... he's a guest, I might let him off, we'll see. I've picked a year, and I've got...
Let me off, aren't
we? No, that's because you know the rules. And I've got certain facts about the year, which I will read out in a slow and considered manner. If you think you know the year, shout out your name and then the year. If you're correct, you win a pint when I see you. Sorry, Ash.
I'm getting on the next train.
Oh, that's fine. You can come to the next skeptics meeting on Monday. If you get the year wrong, you're locked out of the next clue, so it stops people from just shouting out years, okay? Now, because you're a guest and you were trying to be funny, and we appreciate that.
Thank you.
I will let you off. You've obviously never listened to the podcast before, which, I don't know, makes me want to penalise you even further. However...
It's so inappropriate to be funny on this podcast.
No, you've got no idea.
I didn't realise.
It's the same gag as Trev used on the first guest of the year.
Oh, okay, are we ready now?
Yes.
It's a serious stuff. Okay. Just to let you know, okay, that the score is 2-0 to Stephen, okay? Trev had the opportunity last week of winning, but he lost.
You're basically
to a,
out of,
he lost to
out
a 16
of me and Stephen, I'm third.
He is third. He lost to a guest who actually hasn't even left school yet.
Hasn't even done his GCSE.
So, okay, are you ready, guys?
Ready.
Yes. I'm ready.
Okay. Here we go. September the 1st, a coup in Libya ousts King Idris and brings Colonel Gaddafi to power. By the way, no Googling.
Yeah, I got pulled up that on the Merseyside Skeptics, I think it was, game shows. They heard me Googling in the background.
Yeah, no, you're not allowed.
Trev, 1982.
Nope, you're locked out, sorry, Trev.
Got it.
March the 13th, Apollo program Apollo 9 returns safely to Earth after testing lunar module components.
Steve.
Ash.
1969.
Oh. Oh no, he's got it!
Oh my god.
I got it off the first clip. And I was trying to rack my brains because I actually read that factoid earlier today that Gaddafi took over.
Oh no, I put an easy clue in, did I? Oh, I'm sorry, guys, but that means Steve is now 3-0 ahead. How does that make you feel, Trev?
Smug.
Not you. I know you can see your smug from here. Trev, how does that make you feel?
Sorry, I'm busy trying to make myself feel better.
Okay, right, we'll move on to Ash. How does that make you feel?
Well, I think that you should listen back to the recording, because I'm pretty sure I said my name at exactly the same time as Steve, and I was going to say 1969.
It was a little bit after me.
Unfortunately, but... I mean... We
there's
do
a time delay.
Yeah, there may be a time delay.
No, you see, Steve starts with a consonant, and Ash starts with a vowel, so you just had the harsher sound to come in with. That's where it is.
Yeah,
I think that should be called a draw.
Well, I tell you what, if Ash comes down to Cardiff, I'll buy him a pint anyway. How about that?
That sounds like a deal. Sounds like a deal.
Okay, if you actually, you know... And I want to mention now, you did come down to Cardiff and did a talk at Skeptics in the Pub.
I did, yes. I think it was it last good. October?
Yeah, I think
November?
Maybe the first or second or something.
Second.
Second, yeah.
You saw him, did you, Trev?
Yeah. I was the one that drew the Superman symbol.
Oh, did you? Fantastic. Yeah. Wonderful. See, I genuinely am psychic. I managed to divine that you had that symbol drawn without using any trick.
But at some point when I wasn't actually checking for it, and I couldn't work out when that was. It's the misdirection of when the misdirection is going to happen that caught me out.
Couldn't possibly tell you, but you're a million miles away.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if the pub managed to get up the fake bloodstains, is my concern. From the psychic surgery, for those of you who don't know what I was doing, I'm going to have to start putting paper towels or something down before I do that trick.
Where do you get your fake blood from? Is it, do you kill pigs, or do you just buy it?
Well, that'd be genuine then. No, I use food colouring, flour, and water.
Because it means
I can lick it off my fingers and eat it, and it looks really, really gross.
Nice.
Yeah, I was really gutted I missed that one, because it was during the time when the wife was pregnant and she wasn't far off, and so I couldn't make that one. And I, you know, where are you doing it next?
Well, I'll be doing it during the Fringe for a week's run, and I will also be doing it in Birmingham on the 12th of October. September, October.
Okay.
Sometime later in the year, I'll be in Birmingham.
Fair enough. Don't you have some skeptic thing to plug?
I have a very, very... Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat, sorry. Sorry, just talk amongst yourselves.
There we go. Just so I don't.
Well, no, you just left us hanging. I didn't have anything to talk about, so it was just dead air.
Well,
which
yes.
We like to have here on Think Rant as often as possible.
Yes, I do have something. I do have something to plug. Skeptics on the Fringe. We're back again for the second year running. It's a 3-week festival within a festival within a festival at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, which will be running from the 6th to the 27th of August. And over the course of 3 weeks, we will have a total of 65 individual performances. There's, I think, 7 shows in total. We have a daily Skeptics in the Pub style event. We have a daily game show called Devil's Advocate, which went down really well last year and is hopefully going to be just as fantastic this year. We've got walking tours around the city. We've got a science tour. We've got a Skeptics tour. We've got a children's show planned called Stand Back, I'm Gonna Try Science with your guest, Professor Bunsen McBurner. And we've got, what else have we got? We've got my Psychic Con Man show running for a week. We've got a magician called Declan Deneen doing a week's run with us. And we've got a couple of other special events as well, a total of 65 during 3 weeks. Last year we had about 44, and I made myself ill halfway through the second week, so I'm expecting to get maybe to the first Thursday or Friday before I drop dead. But it's all free. That's the kicker.
Sorry, did you say it was free?
All of it's free. Every single one of these shows is free.
Free.
free. It's part of the PBH Free Fringe, so we don't charge an admission price. However, there will be a burly man in a kilt standing with a bucket at the end. If you want to find out more,
is, isn't there?
That sounds like porn. I really hope that's for some other reason than I'm thinking.
Well, we actually do have a talk on pornography at one point. Is porn dangerous?
Perhaps there.
Yeah. And I can't tell you just yet what speakers are who we have lined up. We've got a couple of interesting names coming along. And what we like to do is throw into the mix a local speakers as well and members of the group. So we've got this platform of well-known speakers mixed up with regular members of the group. So everyone's on the same platform, because skepticism isn't about celebrity. It's about the process. It's about skepticism itself. And Skeptics on the Fringe is going to be back for 3 whole weeks in August. And our website will be going live at the end of the month, skepticsonthefringe.co.uk.
Sounds pretty awesome.
And join our Facebook group, Skeptics on the Fringe.
Oh, I'm going to do that. That's the longest plug we've ever had on the show.
It's because I'm just amazing. I've got so much on. It's fantastic.
I'm just putting it to how much ITV would charge for it. Yeah, okay. About 20 grand. But for you, a beer when you come down to Cardiff.
So I'll buy you back the beer.
Great.
Fantastic. I should also point out it's sponsored by Paranormality, the new book by Richard Wiseman.
Ah, that's a good book. I've read that book, and I've left a review on Amazon, and I suggest anyone who hasn't do so. So, are you reading any good books at the moment, Ash?
I've just restarted reading, it's not a science or skepticism book, it's a book by a Japanese author called Haruki Murakami, and it's a book called Hardboiled Wonderland and the End of the World, and it's a fantastic book. The alternate chapters take place in different realities. The odd ones take place in the real world. The alternate ones take place in this bizarre fantasy world. And I don't want to spoil the ending for anyone who wants to read it, but it's a wonderful way it mixes us together at the end. And it's a wonderful, wonderful author.
Great. What are you reading, Steve?
Game of Thrones at the moment.
Oh, right. Okay. Trev, are you reading anything?
Yeah, I just finished Hitch 22. And I'm just starting Nerd Do Well.
Ah, what do you think
because,
of Hitch 22?
My brain's melting a little bit from Hitch 22. Well, some of the stuff where he talks about when he was in some political hotspot at some particular time, it's very, of course, you know who this person is and that person is, and he'll have some brilliantly constructed sentence, which I think, well, am I going to go and Google that? For something that happened in 1968, and I've got no idea, just to get the joke. It's probably a good joke, but that only happened for maybe two of the chapters. For the whole rest of the book, it's a wonderful read, actually.
Do you want to hear my name-dropping story?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, okay. Steve and I, last year, went to the Hay Festival, which had Christopher Hitchens talking.
No way!
Yeah, listen to this. So we actually listened to him. He was quite good. And afterwards, he was in the bookshop signing Hitch 22. He was doing a book signing. So as he's finished talking, I bolted through the emergency door.
In fact, it was like something out of Back to the Future. There were trails of fire.
Yeah.
From John's footsteps.
So, and
he is that much of a fanboy.
Yeah, and I still got to the queue and was like the 12th person in it, okay? And I'd had my copy of the book anyway, ready for him to sign. I'd already read about half of it. So I walked up, and there he is, Christopher Hitchens at the table. Like, and I'm not a fan or anything like that. But you know, to be honest, it was great to meet him.
You are, John. You are a fan.
No, I'm not a lovey. I'm not, honestly. I can take it or leave it. But anyway, so I went up to him, and you know, he was very genuine, and he said, and he's so grateful that I bought his book. And he was grateful because I'd already started reading it. I wasn't just picking it up off the table. I brought my own copy in. And he says, before he even said, who can I sign, who do you want me to make it out to, like I'd heard he'd said that to other people. But so I just walked up and I gave him the book. I said, he says, what do you want me to write? I said, no, I don't want you to write anything, I just want your John Hancock. Okay. And I thought he would get this joke, because obviously, you know, he wrote Thomas Jefferson's autobiography, you know, he's a big fan of the American Constitution. And he even said to me, while he was writing in the book, okay, that's quite funny because John Hancock was on the Constitution and all this. But he misunderstood me and he signed it to John Hancock. All the best, Chris Hitchens. So I have a copy of Hitch 22 here made out to Chris John Hancock. And I'm thinking, you know, great. I don't know what to do with it. It's not made out to me.
It's made out to one of the founding fathers.
It's made out to
Hitchens. At least you know he means that one.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got
everybody else's best wishes can be buggered, really, can't they? But you know he means that.
It's relatively cheap to change your name by default. It'd be fine. Just change your name for the purposes of having that book signed personally to you.
Yeah, unfortunately, that means that the wife will have to change her name, and she's only just got round to finishing off all the stationery and stuff. So she's going to be pissed off. So sorry about from that little. That little, you know, journey into, you know, Reminisceville. Is anybody going to volunteer a story? Because I don't know whose turn it is.
I'll volunteer a story.
Whoa, hang on. What? Sorry? Have you got a story, Steve?
Oh, yeah, very, very funny. I may not turn up with stories, but I tend to have stories partway through, you know?
Okay, go on then, Steve.
I just think, I'm sure you'll probably all come from the same point of view on this one. But, of course, tonight at 9 o'clock, the BBC will be broadcasting a programme which is going to show a man dying.
Okay.
On television. How do we feel about it? Because there seems to be some sense of moral outrage from the conservative press that, you know, we dare to show this man's final moment on this earth.
Is this human thing that we're watching? Right,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, how dare we show this, be so intrusive, and you know, be here at this point of and make entertainment out of something's last moment on the earth.
I don't know if I want to watch it now. You spoiled the ending.
It's like Titanic, the boat sinks.
No! At least tell me Leo survives.
You really want Leo to survive?
I have no idea what program this is.
It's Inside the Human Body. And it's on at 9 o'clock.
It started last week, right. Trev. It's a human body, you know, documentary starring what's his name?
Michael Mosley.
Yeah, scientist dude. You know him.
Well, let's say co-starring. I mean, the guy who's going to be the main part of it. At least give him top billing for this. It's the last thing he's going to be in.
Is it his debut as well?
I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, this chap, Gerald, took the decision himself. Basically, the production team for the film went to hospices where people were dying and said, do you mind if we film your last moments? To which this gentleman, Gerald, said, no, I would quite like for my last moments to be useful to someone and hopefully help someone. So he, you know, was fully cognitive at the time and fully signed on to it, and he was quite happy for this this to happen. In fact, he's quite pragmatic about it and pretty much said that, you know, everyone dies, so, you know, it's going to happen. I don't want to die, but, yeah, do it.
But I think we're all going to agree that if he agreed to it, then what's the bloody problem?
Well, exactly, but it seems to be this whole thing, you know, obviously I picked the story up from, I knew about it, but I picked it up from the Daily Mail, particularly for this point, and there's this outrage that we should be showing this, whereas, you know, not only is it is his wish to do it, but I think, you know, we have to be grown up about it. Death is as much a part of life. You know, as birth.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we can show people entering this world, surely we can show people leaving this world. I think, you know, it's there should be no taboo around it at all.
Yeah. Are we back to porn again? There's not conception we're talking about.
Sorry, I'm just wondering if did the Daily Mail, after they showed all this outrage at the man being shown dying, did they then print a picture of it underneath, just so you knew what they were talking about?
Ironically, yes.
Why am I not surprised?
Ironically, yes. There's a picture of Gerald's corpse in his bed with his grieving family weeping next to it.
I love their stories.
The actual caption of his family weep next to his bed as he takes his final breath in front of a TV camera.
I love it when they get outraged at this woman is dressed really, really badly and really, really sexily, and it's been on television and we shouldn't do that. Here's a picture of it.
Yeah. Which is exactly what they're doing there as well, obviously.
I love it.
Talking of what women wear, have we been? Has anybody been in on a slut walk this week?
Well,
I haven't been on one, but I would go on one.
That's really tricky. What are we going to do? How are we ever going to say to somebody, I think it's a great idea, love, I think you should go on a slut walk? Your sister, not so much, but you definitely should. You know, we can't encourage it without sounding creepy, so that's all I'm saying about it.
Well, I'm going on it. I'm going on one. It was going to be this Saturday. They've had to postpone it until the beginning of June. But there's going to be one in Edinburgh, and I think nearly 400 people had signed up to take part in it. So me and several of the Edinburgh sceptics and a few of the humanists are going to be going along to it, so it should be quite a good turnout from the sceptical point of view as well.
Cool. But the original story
behind
this.
I might go in my Frankenfurter costume, yes.
Excellent.
Oh, what? I was thinking about trying to find a short skirt I could possibly find.
Steve, maybe even
shaving my legs.
I was thinking for you, mate, a Basque, for sure.
For sure, a Basque, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's great. I mean, I think you were going to mention the original story, which of course is in Toronto,
yes.
I believe it was, a police constable saying, girls, if you don't want to get raped, don't dress like sluts, was basically what he said. It's your fault, you're asking for it.
I
think it may even popped up in there as well.
As a result, it sprung up all over the world, and there's these so-called slut walks, people holding signs saying it's not the victim's fault, and it's not. And it's quite sick to blame the victim for something so awful and so damaging to say, well, it's your fault, you shouldn't dress like that. Well, I'm sorry, who's to dictate what people should be allowed to wear? Well, who's to say people are allowed to wear or what they're not allowed to wear? It's just ridiculous. And people saying, well, you shouldn't walk down that alley, you shouldn't walk down this alley, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. And it's getting to a situation where people are saying, well, no, you can't do that, you can't go there, you can't wear this, because otherwise this will happen to you and it'll be all your fault. It's never the victim's fault. And sorry, going off on a ranty tangent, but it is.
That's what we're here for.
It just really, 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 really got to me. Really, really.
But Trev and I touched on this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, Trev, when we were talking about. Bollocks.
You were talking about bollocks?
You were thinking about bollocks, mate.
Shit. Yeah.
Bollocks and shit.
I'm going to edit that out.
And then you have to go and have a lie down.
If I knew this was the type of podcast I was getting involved in, I would have bought some popcorn.
Sorry. I was talking about our discussion about karma and the natural victim blaming that comes with that mentality.
Yeah.
Okay. But a lot of on these slut walks, I've seen a lot of pictures in the media. None of them were dressed that slutty. I was kind of disappointed.
Well, start that one again. This time in English. No, people aren't.
because I think the idea of slutty and looking slutty is very subjective to a large degree. You know, what does constitute being slutty? Someone might say, well, a nice short skirt is slutty. Other people might say, no, there's nothing wrong with that. So if you don't think the images are slutty enough, you're obviously looking at the wrong images.
Well, surely the point of the walk is you wear whatever the hell you want. If you want to slut it up, then go ahead. It's your right to if you want.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Like that walk should be the last thing to force anybody to conform to something.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I couldn't see anything that was, you know, slutty.
You were really looking, weren't you?
I was really looking. Like, you know, if someone puts up a URL saying, check out these people on a slut walk, you know, you expect a bit more. What can I say?
I'm sure you can find a decent enough picture in the Daily Mail. Outrage at the slut walk. Here's a picture.
Oh, yeah. Can I try and bring this out of the gutter with a different story?
That's unusual for you, Trev.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This week, we've got Think Rant's Pink Lance. Oh, yeah. This week, Camilla Parker Bowles. Well, I know that's not a proper name anymore.
Hang on. Let Steve finish having a hat. Right, okay. Carry on.
Camilla, right, she got in the papers on Wednesday this week by being photographed in her visit to Charleston House. She was standing next to a nude painting of a man. The papers thought it was so risque that Camilla was publicly standing next to a limp penis. The papers seemed to think we hadn't seen it every other time she's in the news. To be fair, this cock had a lot more hair on top of it. And the balls made for a stronger chin than Charlie's got as well.
You know better than to talk about Prince Charles on this podcast.
I don't. See,
as someone who's received funding from the Prince's Trust, I have no comment.
Oh, that's like saying that you receive money from the Templeton Foundation.
It went to a skeptical cause.
But I bet you didn't turn that homeopathy is a load of shit, though, did you?
Didn't the Templeton grant half a million quid or something?
It wasn't quite that much.
They give you a fiver and tell you to put it in some water, and then, you know.
Dilute it until I've got old school money. Surely that is that how it works? Homeopathizing money. That's homeopathizing is not a word I know, but we should add that to the dictionary. I'm going to homeopathize you.
Are you writing this down?
What that means? I'm writing this down. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a random empty threat. I know.
Okay. Did you just have the one story?
I've actually got another. Sorry, I forgot.
Trev's coming up with the goods this week.
Go on,
okay,
then, Trev.
I'll be quick with this one because I don't want to take away from any of Ash's time because you're only the guest. And you've only got the one chance. So, think rant, ink dance. Oh yeah, it's another rhyming one. An Orthodox Jewish newspaper has apologized for digitally deleting Hillary Clinton from a photo of Barack Obama and his staff monitoring the raid that killed Osama bin Laden.
I saw this story. This is it wasn't, and I wouldn't mind, but it wasn't just Hillary Clinton. There was another woman, young lady in the background who got deleted, but she didn't get a mention.
Yeah. But Hillary Clinton is a woman who at least two US presidents have wanted to edit out of existence at some stage in their careers. For an Orthodox Jewish newspaper to even try shows a fair amount of balls. And actually, given that they show no pictures of women at all, I would imagine they show a massive amount of balls. But I'm not judging. Sorry, okay, I'm done.
That's okay. I'm afraid I'm out of stories now. We've covered the slut walk and the big questions. I have nothing else interesting to say, apart from maybe a bit more self-promotion for 9 more minutes.
Well, I was... I'm sorry, I can't allow you that much time. But I was going to say...
That much more time.
I'll ask a question, and if Ash says no, we'll save it till next week. If he says yes, we'll do it now, okay? And that is, Ash, did you go and see Uncaged Monkeys in Edinburgh?
It's not until Saturday.
Oh, I thought they already had it up there.
No, it's already been to Glasgow, but it's on Saturday, and I am going...
Glasgow.
I will be going there.
Okay. All right. We won't talk about it then. We'll do it next
Ship
week.
Ship sinks at the end.
We'll do it next week.
Oh, no. Does Leo survive?
We'll do it next week because Dean's on.
Yes.
So.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So, well, I'm saying Dean's on. I'm hoping Dean's on. I shouldn't have said anything in case he doesn't come on now. Okay. So we're going to move on to this. The top 10 ads complained about in 2010. Has anybody seen this?
Yep, I have not.
I haven't, no.
Okay. These are probably... I mean, do you guys watch TV?
I...
Don't laugh, Trev.
I'm not connected to a television. I watch Doctor Who on iPlayer, and that's about it.
Oh, well, okay. You're not going to like this, then.
But if you're only going to watch a bit of TV, then that is the bit of TV to watch.
Exactly.
Apparently, Trev, you watch a bit of telly, don't you?
Well, yeah, I'm a ungrateful benefit sponge, as you all know, so I've got to fill my day somehow. Jeremy Kyle's not going to watch himself. Oh, no, wait, yes, he does. Yes, he does.
But you watch adverts, don't you? So you've probably seen some pretty good adverts and some pretty rubbish adverts in your time.
Yes, and being as old as I am, I remember when there was no such thing as a Sky Plus box and I had to actually sit through the bloody adverts.
Okay. Yeah. But these were from last year, okay? The previous year, it was, I think it was actually the Christian Party, the political party.
The year before was the News and with the Ice Cream, wasn't it?
Well, this is in the UK. That was the American thing, wasn't it?
No, sure.
I was thinking, hang on, wait a second. Where was the nude nun with an ice cream?
I thought it was in the States, dude. Honestly, I did.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
It was, yeah. But it was
Trev's
a Christian
got a Catholic
party.
Story next week.
Do you remember when the Humanists did that bus ad, which was like, this, and it was in train stations, there's probably no God, so just get on with your life now, but...
Yeah.
And then what happened was, after that, the Christian party, the political party now, this has nothing obviously to do with any church or anything, thought, well, let's, let's fight back. So they said... There definitely is a God. Come and join the Christian party. But of course, there was a massive amount of complaints to the ASA saying there was an unsubstantiated claim in there. but anyway, so 2010, did anybody
Brilliant.
See the number one was Paddy Power with 1,300 complaints. I don't know if you saw this. It was two football teams on the pitch who were blind. Trying to play football, and then one of them accidentally, or I don't know.
Basically, what you have to explain the situation is in blind football, in order for the players to determine where the ball is, there's a bell in the ball, so the players can follow the direction that the ball is moving. In this advert, a little putty tat with a bell on its collar ran onto the pitch.
And it's suddenly followed by what I can only describe as a complete belter.
Yeah.
And a third. see? I think they need to watch this ad.
Yeah. They might have got the sound effect from The Apprentice last night. It was like...
yeah, so that was very unpopular. There was the Mary Stopes, because people were complaining that, although it didn't mention the word abortion, it was... promoting it, telling women that they may have a choice after getting pregnant. Department of Energy, apparently they're not allowed to scare people with the fact that global warming may be happening. Maritalaffair.co.uk. I don't know if you guys have seen this or been on the website perhaps, but if you're married and you want to have an affair, there's a website for you.
Maritalaffair.co.uk.
I don't know if it's still available. I think I can hear someone tapping away on the keyboard. I'm not sure.
That's not me. Thank you very much.
Hey, Trev, does your missus you listen to the podcast?
She will now.
and the rest of them were quite boring, really. I mean, it's amazing. Oh, does anyone remember the Marmite election broadcasts?
Yes.
By the Love Campaign and the Hate Party and the Love Party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, people complained about that because they were confused.
Didn't get to Doctor Who.
They were confused that these adverts may be construed for real political parties.
Look, if somebody gets a voting slip and they think there's Marmite on it, that's actually a dirty protest. Just throw it away. Don't smear it on your toast. For God's sake.
See, as soon as you mentioned this top 10 most complained about ads of 2010, I did a very, very quick Google, And the first one I came across here was actually from Australia. And their most complaint about ad of 2010 was from the Advanced Medical Institute, cookie jar at the top of a cupboard, man offers wife an erect penis as a step.
It could work.
I assume it must be some sort of Viagra ad. Or for really, really good cookies.
Or it's just maybe a scene out of many, many marriages. Man offers wife erect penis, she steps on it.
She'd rather a cookie. Yeah. Okay, can I launch into another slightly humorous story then? Seems as we've only got a few minutes left.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay, here we go. Nude gardener's ass hauled into court.
Just his ass.
Apparently so. A 62-year-old Gloucestershire naturist with a penchant for pruning in the buff was cuffed for indecent exposure and now faces three charges of outraging public decency. Donald Sprigg was hauled before Cheltenham Magistrates Court, accused of causing his Cirencester neighbours harassment, alarm and distress. The Daily Mail reports.
Do they have a picture?
They don't, unfortunately. The aptly named Sprigg denied the charges, while his solicitor, Mohammed Iqbal, insisted that the neighbours who protested actually lived 150 metres away and had captured the alleged indecency from their balcony using a long-distance lens. And this kind of goes back to going out of your way to find a fence, really, doesn't it? He was initially arrested for indecent exposure. He maintains he's a practicing nudist and does this in his own back garden. The neighbours who've complained are, you know, miles away. They've taken pictures and, you know, they've had this like massive lens on. He says he tried to do it. Massive lens on. Sorry. Thanks for prompting me there, Ash. Yeah. Okay.
I have a gutter line. I'm sorry.
He's going to be the most popular gardener with all of the ladies in the area.
Well, that's
he
probably
can
why
tell them all, I managed to offend somebody from 150 metres away with this thing.
Yeah, he says he always checks first and only goes in his garden naked when he knows his nearest neighbour's away. He's acted lawfully at all times and taken reasonable care to ensure that no one would be offended by his actions. We kind of done a similar story to this on like one of the really, really old podcasts, didn't we? It's like a similar thing. People just in their garden want to be naked.
Yeah.
So let's be serious for a second now. I know what you think, Steve. You think, you know, as long as he's not, you know, hanging his cock over the fence, there shouldn't really be a problem, should there?
No, not at all.
No. You got any problem with this, Trev?
Well, if he's got his shears out, he could easily get some low-hanging fruit severed. There's some very dangerous practices we don't want to encourage, but if he's taking the risk, then that's fine.
Are you trying to say that the HSE might have something to say about it?
The who with the what now?
Health safety thing.
Oh, right, yeah.
You thought it was an insurance company on the telly, didn't you? No, that's HSA, sorry. Have you got anything to say, Ash, about it?
I don't see why it's a problem. If he's in his own back garden, if he's not wafting it around in front of people, then I don't see what the issue is. I mean, I might be naked right now. Would you take offence at that?
I'd be offended if you weren't. I was under the assumption that...
Aren't we all naked? No, I've told Steve he does need to keep his pants on.
No, I don't see why it's an issue. This idea we have of public nudity is just ridiculous. I don't see anything wrong with it. If I saw somebody walking down the street naked, I wouldn't instantly go, "Oh my God, there's a naked person!" I'd go, "Why is everyone else making such an issue of it?" You know, there are bears walking down the street naked. Don't complain about them.
And Ashley's slut walk has taken an interesting turn.
Yeah, because I want to see the bears on that walk.
I think it's silly. I can't see why there should be a problem with it, especially if he's in his own back garden.
No. Silence.
Wow.
Did we lose on Ash? I think we've just lost Ash.
Got it.
At least that category shows that it was Ash's mic which had the problem.
Yeah, there was...
fairly obvious. But let's not make too much of it in case he managed to fix it on the podcast. You never know.
We're back.
Hello!
Hello! Ah!
That's not good.
No problem.
Okay.
We're just going to close up now anyway. As usual, we plug everything at the end of the podcast instead of the beginning. Steve, I think I'm going to have to give you a task, which should be at the start of the podcast, you say, John, I need to plug the blog, the Facebook, the Twitter.
I'll probably do it at the end.
Oh, no, because it's not. No, because they might have turned off by now.
But, you know, if people haven't, you're leaving them with the last thing that they're pressing.
Okay.
Please leave a review on iTunes, even though you probably won't get to the end of it, really. It's mostly rubbish. You'll turn off about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, anyway, plug in. Thinkrant at. On
you don't even know the bloody URL.
No,
right,
no,
I'll...
I was going to search through the Twitter one. I wasn't.
All right, okay.
So on
it's
on
like
Twitter,
us every week,
it's at Thinkrant. Send us a message. Nobody ever has. We'd be really excited if somebody would. Follow us on Facebook, we're on there, and you can also read our blog at
thinkrant.blogspot.com. I told you you didn't know the URL.
I did know it, I said it last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's giving you an opportunity to get in there and say it. That's
I don't
all.
Know why no one likes us on Twitter. We got fans on Facebook, but Twitter is just, I don't know. No one uses it.
No.
Fair enough. Okay, well, thanks very much for everyone for listening. I'd like to thank Ashley for putting up with us this evening.
Thanks for
coming along. I'm sure he has loads of better stuff to do tonight than sit on here and talk to three assholes.
Well, he's got 65 free events to start.
Well, exactly. I had to plug
plugging for the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah. Have you got anything else you need to plug now before I sign off?
If anybody's around in Edinburgh next Thursday evening, we've got Professor Richard Wiseman coming along to our regular Skeptics in the Pub at 7:30 at the Bongo Club, and he'll be talking about paranormality.
Oh, that's excellent. Oh,
brilliant.
Can you send him down our way to Cardiff, please?
I will have a word in his shell-like.
Thank you very much, because I love Richard Wiseman. Not, you know what I mean.
For me, it's more of a lust thing.
A lust thing, see? Yeah. I love that. I love his head. It's just lovely.
Oh, John, quick. You got this compulsion to say something disastrous at the end of the episode.
Okay. Can you do us a favour, Trev? Can you sign out for me, please?
Okay. Oh, well, thanks everybody for listening. And thanks to all the contributors, including me. Hey, that's okay, Trev. We'll see you again next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye,
bye, everybody.
Goodbye.